wake up, put your shoes on, take a breath of the northern air, and rub those eyes.
This is the morning of March 6th, and a lot is happening in the NFL, and with the Vikings, it's going to be a tumultuous week as NFL teams try to get under the salary cap. We've already seen the Vikings cutting Kyle Rudolph and eating a dead cap hit. I want to ask Jeff Diamond what a dead cap hit is. We all talk about it. It's very hard to define. Let's have Jeff explain it to us here on Jeff Diamond's Vikings and NFL Insider, part of the TalkNorth.com podcast network. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod to see all the shows as they are released. Wherever you listen to us, rate us. Let us know how we're doing. Subscribe. Talk up the network. We do appreciate it. And thanks, as always, to our producer, Brandon Morton, and our longtime sponsor, White Bear Lake Superstore, whitebearlakesuperstore.com. All right, Jeff, let's just start there before we get to all the interesting moves around the NFL. Explain a dead cap hit to me.
Yeah, I think that's the difference, Jim, between the NFL and, for example, Major League Baseball, the NBA, where contracts are fully guaranteed. And they're not dealing really with signing bonuses and prorating the contract and the signing bonus over the life of the contract. So if a player signs a five-year contract with a $5 million signing bonus, the salary cap hit is $1 million per year as that signing bonus prorates the $5 million over 5 years to $1 million per year. What happens with a dead cap is if a player is released or traded in the midst of that five-year contract, for example, after year three, and then there might be $2 million that has not yet hit the cap, then that will accelerate into the cap, and that's what is called dead money. And so we're using a very simple example, but for certain teams, such as the Rams with Jared Goff and the Eagles with Carson Wentz, the dead money hit is significant, talking $20 to $30 million, and that's where it really becomes very difficult for a team to be able to juggle their salary cap and absorb a big salary cap hit such as that. Now, in the case you mentioned of Kyle Rudolph, for example, he's a player where he was far enough in his contract that the dead money hit is overcome by the cap savings by releasing him because he had a big base salary scheduled for this year. So the Vikings saved $5.1 million against the 2021 salary cap, whatever that number comes in at. We don't know yet. It should come out any day. And I would have thought it would have been out by now because teams can franchise and transition players by tomorrow. By March 9th is coming up. And that's the deadline for franchise tagging, which is Tuesday. And so a team really would like to know, hey, what's the salary cap number for 2021? We know it's going down from 198 to 200. Down to about 180 to 185, and I'm thinking it'll probably end up about 185, but teams really need to know that number. And so if I'm a team executive, I'm kind of waiting, why is it taking so long for the management council of the league and the Players Association to come up with this number for 2021 and then kind of go forward from there? And so there are a lot of moving parts going on right now as the teams get ready for the start of the league year. March 17th is getting closer, and there are a lot of decisions to be made, including by the Vikings.
Let's talk about the Kyle Rudolph move, J.J. Watt's move, Roethlisberger re-signing, and a little Rashad Bateman. Plus, we're going to keep so many storylines around the NFL we're going to talk about and what this next week might be like. A reminder, Jeff is the former Vikings general manager, former NFL executive of the year, former president of the Tennessee Titans as well, so he has had to make these decisions. Let's get to the local news here. Kyle Rudolph, as expected, was released. Obviously not a surprise. The thing is, everyone reacted sentimentally, and I get that. Kyle is a really good guy, great guy to have in our community, great teammate, great guy for media, great guy for, you know, pretty much everybody he came in contact with. But, you know, Jeff, he only averaged about like 24, 25 yards a game over the last two seasons. He just really wasn't a big part of the passing offense anymore. He's not a dominant blocker. Do you really think there's a good job out there someplace for him?
Well, I think he will definitely play in the league, and he's still a quality tight end. Is he elite anymore? He has a couple Pro Bowls under his belt. No, he's probably not an elite tight end. But I think he's a good player, and I think he definitely improved his blocking significantly over the last couple of years in the Vikings offense, but he wants to be more part of the passing game, and he's still a great red zone target. He's got tremendous hands. We saw that with the game-winning catch in overtime against the Saints in the playoffs 2 years ago. And so, yeah, I think he's still a quality player. We know he's a great person, and I think what happened to him here is, first of all, his contract was too big, but then I think the emergence of Irv Smith Jr. and Tyler Conklin really kind of sealed the deal for Kyle, and he knew that. He's a smart guy, and he saw when he missed the last four or five games with the injury, and especially Conklin came on, and Irv Smith Jr., they drafted in the second round in 2019, and we know the kind of talent level he has, but I think the emergence of Conklin specifically really kind of sealed the deal for Kyle, and so he made this proclamation about a month ago, well, I'm not going to take a pay cut. And I want a different role. I want to be more targeted. Well, I think that was kind of a preemptive strike on his part and try to raise his value around the league because he knew he was going to be released. And it kind of made it sound like, oh, it was mutual, but it really wasn't mutual. And that's the way it works sometimes. And so Kyle Rudolph, he's the first domino to fall, but the Vikings need to have several more dominoes to fall as they get under the salary cap to prepare for the new league year that starts, as I said, in 11 days. And what's next? Perhaps a restructure of Riley Reiff, who's supposed to make close to $15 million this year. He played well last year, but not at that level. I think you'll see Shamar Stephen get released because now they feel like Michael Pierce is ready to come back. And I think they're going to draft a defensive tackle probably in the first round or in the second round. And then the question mark on guys like Dan Bailey and Britton Colquitt, we'll see if they can save some money there. And I think the real interesting question, too, is, and Rick Spielman had a press conference this week, Jim, as you know, and he was talking about Anthony Barr. And I've been on the record for a couple of years that feeling that that signing was really kind of a mistake. And at the level that he was signed for $13+ million a year for the role he plays, he's a really good player. We know that. But in this system, he's not getting sacks. He's not making enough big plays. He's not as impactful as Kendricks. And I'm not even sure he was as impactful perhaps as Eric Wilson last year, who made a lot of, had several sacks, had several interceptions. And I've never really understood the, I don't know, I think part of it is that he was a first-round pick and Zimmer loves him and all this and that. He's smart. He calls the signals on defense. But to me, if you can save $7.7 million by releasing Anthony Barr at this stage, I think that's a good place to go to get some money. But I don't think they're going to do it, listening to Spielman, who said he's a critical piece. And if they keep Barr, then you can say goodbye to Eric Wilson. They're not going to be able to keep him. And Anthony Harris is probably going to be on the move too. And the Vikings will be looking for a new safety, probably drafting one in the first three rounds. And the Barr situation has always been kind of curious to me. And I felt a couple years ago, a guy named Roger Saffold was on the market, a really excellent offensive guard. And he was interested in the Vikings. He ended up signing in Tennessee because the Vikings couldn't pay him enough. And I think part of that was because they did the Barr signing. And Saffold would have made a big difference in that offensive line the last couple of years if he had been signed here. And so we'll see. I think Barr's going to be here from hearing Spielman talk, but you never know.
Well, I've agreed with you. I felt all along that Anthony Barr was – listen, he was really pretty spectacular player his first couple of years in the league. But then they got to a point where he just wasn't making any splash plays anymore. He wasn't making the – he wasn't, you know, intercepting passes. He wasn't sacking the quarterback. Occasionally he'd force a fumble, but not all that frequently. I just think when you pay an outside linebacker, he's got to make the big splash plays, and Anthony hasn't. I also agree with you. I think they're going to keep him around, and I don't know that that's a good decision. But, yeah, Zimmer's first draft pick, somebody who makes feel very comfortable, somebody who is a smart player, runs the defense, and I don't think they like admitting they got something wrong on a guy.
Yeah, and I think in his case, because they feel like they're so attached to him, that he may be a good target for a restructure
right.
in terms of lowering his cap number. But what that means is you add more cap dollars in the future mm-hmm. on Anthony Barr. And so, because I'm not sure that they're going to want to extend or restructure Cousins again like they did last year, where they saved about $10 million against the cap. They might, because they're obviously married to him for at least probably the next 2 years. But I think that it could be problematic if they do another extension with Cousins and jack up his dead money down the road. Right now, he's got about $10 million of dead money in 2022, where they could theoretically let him go if he doesn't have a really good year and they don't think he's worth the money anymore. But yeah, I think Barr may be the guy that they restructure, as they did last year with Danielle Hunter and with Kendricks, to save some money, because they're going to need to free up some more money under the cap in order to be able to do some things early in free agency. And one of those things was, it was announced this week that they've agreed to a deal with Stephen Weatherly, who's one of our IFA clients and a great guy, as you know. He's a Renaissance guy and really excited that he's coming back to the Vikings. I think it's a really great fit for him to kind of re-jump his career after a little bit of a, shall we say, kind of a tough year in Carolina, where he got hurt and was in a different system. I think he'll be much more effective here and will add a little more depth to that defensive line and compete for a starting job at right defensive end. And I think Stephen's a really great athlete, really excellent player, and should be a good signing. But they have to free up $2.5 million to sign him. They need to be able to tender a couple of kind of key restricted free agents in Afadio Denebo, another defensive end for that depth on the line, and he was starting last year, and also Mike Boone, who's a really good player, excellent special teams guy, and their third running back. And they know that they need depth at running back in case of injury to Dalvin Cook or Alexander Mattison. So Boone is a guy who I'm sure they're going to want to tender. I think it's about $1.7, $1.8 million on him, but you got to free up that kind of money too. And right now the Vikings look like they're about $3.5 million over the projected cap, although that was a $180 million projected cap. So if the cap comes in at $185, then they're a little better shape. And then try to figure out what they do with Riley Reiff, Shamar Stephen, and kind of go from there and their kicking situation. So it's going to be a really interesting next week to 10 days. And that's always the way it goes this time of year. And as a team exec, I was always doing all kinds of contingency planning for what can happen if this happens or that happens, or if we lose this guy or we keep this guy. And so I think it'll be a fun time to watch all the maneuverings in the off season, which are so different than what it was pre-free agency, as you know, Jim. And back in those days, it was pretty much nothing going on until training camp. But now the off seasons are really interesting, and also draft time coming up too.
Yes. Let's get to JJ Watt and Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, some other interesting things around the league, some of which could impact the Vikings. If you like this show, please check out the Viking Update show as well. John Krasinski and I taking a writer's view of the Vikings in the NFL. If you'd like to advertise with this show or on the network, you can reach Karen Cleary at KCLEARY at TalkNorth.com. And as always, thank you to White Bear Lake Superstore. You can see their inventory and all their deals at WhiteBearLakeSuperstore.com.
Yeah, Jim, always happy to talk about the White Bear Lake Superstore, Buick GMC, and my great friend, the owner, Paul Rubin, his general manager, Charlie Guttrell, their great staff, Minnesota's number one volume Buick GMC dealer, 6 years running with the best selection and their super friendly premium team. They've got a great website, WhiteBearLakeSuperstore.com. Check it out, and you'll see great pricing on the first ever Buick Encore GX, stylish and nimble. There's a deal for up to 22% below MSRP on 2020 Buick SUV models for current Buick or GMC owners and lessees, and $5,250 purchase allowance plus an additional $250 purchase allowance on 2021 GMC Sierra 1500 crew cab models. The Wiper Lake Superstore is the Quigley 4x4 van superstore, and they're a certified elite dealer. Only 7% of GM dealers make the cut. So visit in person at 3900 Highway 61 North in Wiper Lake or online at wiperlakesuperstore.com for all your vehicle needs and the premium experience. Buick GMC, we are professional grade.
I think the Midwest bias for a lot of us led us to believe that J.J. Watt was going to want to go play in Green Bay, or he's going to go play with his brothers in Pittsburgh or maybe Tennessee. And he ends up going to Arizona for a lot of money. And it makes, you know, it's one of those moves that in retrospect, it makes sense. Arizona has a good financial situation, very good young quarterback, former teammate DeAndre Hopkins, contending roster, and he's getting paid a lot of money to live in a place where we'd all love to retire. So I guess this shouldn't be a surprise, even though it kind of was.
Yeah, a little bit, because J.J., not quite the impact player he was, obviously, when he was a several-time defensive player of the year, but he's still a great player, or a good enough player to warrant an excellent contract. I'm a little surprised he got to that level without getting any incentives involved, and to make $15 or $16 million a year with, I think it's $23 million guaranteed. I figured it would be closer to maybe 10 to 12 plus incentives, but he got an excellent deal. And so I think he is landing in a good spot for him on a defensive line where they've also got Chandler Jones, who's an impact pass rusher. So he can take some of the pressure off of JJ, and JJ can take some of the pressure off of Chandler Jones. And I think the Cardinals are a team to watch, even though they kind of faded down the stretch last year. But there are certainly quality players on that football team. And I'm happy for JJ. He's such a quality person, did so many great things in Houston. And the only thing I dislike about JJ Watt is that when we recruited him back, I think in 2011 in the draft, and met with he and his family for Blake Barrett and I and our IFA team, and I talked to JJ several times, met him after a Wisconsin-Iowa game, and met his parents, and I thought we had a really good shot of signing him, and we finished number two to Tom Condon in CAA, and number two is no good in the agent business.
Nope.
And especially when he signed that $100 million contract in Houston, that kind of hurt. But anyway, JJ's a great guy, though.
What did you think of the Steelers re-upping with Ben Roethlisberger? I mean, it's one of those moves. It feels like the right move because you need a quarterback, and he's been a good quarterback for a long time. But does it just damage your ability to go get another quarterback who you can kind of build toward a championship with? I don't think anybody expects Ben Roethlisberger to lead them to a championship at this point.
Well, the hard thing is that he starts out last year 11-0.
Yeah.
And things were rolling so great in Pittsburgh, as we know. And then all of a sudden down the stretch, it really kind of fell apart for them, and they had a horrible loss to their arch rival, the Browns, in the wild card round. But I think the fact that he took the $5 million pay cut and they restructured the contract, so there's $15 million in cap savings, I think it's still probably a decent move for one more year. But I think it's pretty obvious that they're going to look to maybe draft a guy high. If they're not sold on Mason Rudolph, who was just so-so when he got his opportunity in 2019, and I think he's had a great career, but can he stay healthy? Can he be the guy for the long term? We'll see what he does this year, but I think it may just be one more year in Pittsburgh, and I wouldn't be surprised if they make a move to draft a guy in the first or second round this year.
And what do you see happening with some of the other quarterback situations, right? It was fascinating to see Drew Brees working out like a maniac, pushing a sled when he's supposedly heading toward retirement. What do you read into that?
Yeah, that's really kind of strange. And I thought by now he would have made his proclamation that he's retiring and going to the broadcast booth. But apparently he's having second thoughts, which I think is kind of a mistake on his part. I thought his arm strength had really declined last year and just was not playing at Drew Brees' level. And so hopefully someone will get in his ear and say, hey, maybe it's time to pack it in, Drew. But it was kind of strange to see that. And it's taken a long time for the word to come out on what he's going to do. And so I think he should retire. And I think the Saints want him to retire because they need the cap space with their dreadful salary cap situation. They have the worst cap situation in the league. At one point, I think they were $70 million over the cap. Then they kind of restructured Breeze's contract, paving the way for him to retire. And then they could save a bunch of money. And they've done a couple other maneuvers on with their cap to save some money. We'll see. The Saints are definitely one of the really fascinating teams to watch early in free agency. What are they going to do? What's going to happen with Breeze? Are they going to try to re-sign Jameis Winston? What's going to happen there? I just don't know. It's really a very difficult situation for my old friend Mickey Loomis, the GM of the Saints.
And what do you make of the other – is there any movement in your eyes toward resolution on some of the other quarterback situations, either Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott?
Yeah, there really hasn't been much that's happened that's changed the projected path of those guys. And we'll see. I do think that the Texans need to listen to offers and listen to them before the draft. And if they can get a blockbuster deal with a Miami, for example, if they can get Tua to come back, go to Houston and send Watson to Miami and get a couple extra picks out of the deal, I think that's something they should definitely consider, because it's just so ugly there at this point. They just kind of need a clean slate there, even though I would absolutely hate as a GM to give up on a top five caliber quarterback in the league. But it's just, unfortunately for Nick Caserio, it's kind of, he's inherited a mess, and it's just going to get uglier and uglier if it continues down this path, unless they can really make inroads with him, which it sounds like it's not going to be the case. Russell Wilson, I think they'll get things patched up in Seattle, even though there's been a lot of murmurs about him and a lot of talk, and then the four teams that he'd be traded to comes out. But wow, I have a hard time seeing that separation happen at this point. Maybe in a year or two, but he's still got a ton of dead money that would hit the Seahawks cap if they were to release him, as is also the case with Watson, because they both signed contracts in recent years. So I don't know how you juggle all that and make that work with those two players. But I think, in my opinion, the guy more likely to move would be Watson, even though the Texans aren't saying anything in that regard. But it's going to be really fascinating to watch both those players. Dak Prescott, I just don't understand why the Cowboys have not signed him long term. And maybe he could be a guy they could do a sign and trade with too, with Watson or with Wilson. And in that regard, those teams would be getting a really excellent quarterback. So he could be a guy that may be on the move in one of those big, big blockbuster deals. We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating week. Next week, let's talk a little bit about Rob Brzezinski. I'm sure you know Rob, and he's done a really good job with the Vikings cap situation. Maybe we'll get a little bit into exactly what his job is like these days. We'll also have tons of developments to talk about. I've heard a couple of insiders call this next week a bloodbath. There's going to be a lot of veteran players put out on the street because of salary cap limitations and the way the NFL teams manage their contracts. Let's get a final thought from Jeff. Reminder, we have a great lineup at TalkNorth.com. Cheryl Reeve, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, Roy Smalley, John Krasinski, tons of outdoor content. Please check it out at at TalkNorth.com, or just subscribe at your favorite podcast app, or just listen to your favorite podcast app, however you want to listen. We do appreciate you listening. Jeff, give us a final thought here.
Yeah, I think one of the exciting things that has happened in the last couple of weeks, Rashad Bateman, who we represent at IFA, we're really excited to represent him. And as you know, we signed Tyler Johnson last year. He had a really very good rookie year and has a good trajectory for the future. But Rashad Bateman has been working out a pre-draft in Arizona, and he ran a sub 4.44 at Exos, where he's been working pre-draft in his training and getting ready for the Minnesota Pro Day on April 1st. And so there's no combine this year. And so part of the strategy, of course, in the agent world, get this information out to the teams and get videos out to the teams and do whatever you can, because there's less opportunities for rookies that are going to be drafted to get in front of the teams. And the pro day is going to be all important. But the fact that Rashad ran this sub 4.44, really exciting. And I think that could really help get him into the first round of the draft this year. And even though there are several good wide receivers, but we know he's a proven guy. He's former Big Ten receiver of the year. He's got enough size and speed. And I think he's a guy that is going to be in that middle to late first round. And hopefully for Viking fans, he doesn't end up in Green Bay, because I think that could be one of the places that may be looking at him, a New England perhaps. And there are a lot of potential targets, Jacksonville. But I think Rashad Bateman has definitely improved his draft stock in recent weeks.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I think he's a heck of a player. I think he's just a born to be an NFL receiver. Speed, agility, ability to adjust in the air, hands, everything. I think he's going to be excellent. But we'll keep talking about Rashad's draft prep, as Jeff will be intimately familiar with that. Once again, we want to thank you for listening. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. We'll talk to you next week.